You're listening to The Next 20 Years, a podcast made in collaboration with Danish design company Bolia about how the world as we know it is going to change in the next 20 years. For this podcast, we have asked some of the most inspiring people on the planet about what they believe will happen in the next 20 years, and I promise that all of these experts are going to challenge your view on the world. So, next up is Martin Lindström. Martin is brand consultant to some of the biggest brands in the world and the best-selling author behind a host of books about consumer behavior. Most famous of which was his study that showed that nearly half of all ad campaigns have zero or negative effect on the consumer. In his presentation today, Martin will tell you about the curious moment that we exist in today, with technologies that have stripped us of empathy, physical contact, and natural transitions between work and private life, and how we over the next 20 years will try to release ourselves from these technologies and regain empathy, physical contact, and natural transitions. I bring to you Martin Lindström. Enjoy.
I want to start telling you an unusual experience I had some years ago. I was sitting with one of my friends and his girlfriend. And at some stage, she stood up, she went into the bathroom, and she disappeared for 20 minutes. We didn't think a lot about it, but when she returned, she looked puzzled. And of course, her boyfriend asked her if everything was okay. "Yeah," she said, "everything is perfect." We didn't talk more about it until one time during that conversation, about half an hour later, she started to scroll through her phones and her boyfriend was just looking over the shoulder and suddenly realized that there were 60 selfies she'd been shooting while she was in the bathroom. Of course, he asked, why did you shoot so many selfies? And she said, "Well, because I know you're going to break up with me right now. And I wanted to freeze that amazing moment we had before it happened." Let me tell you a little bit about what's happening in our time right now. I'm sure you have a phone. I don't. But I'll talk more about that later on. Because the reality is that we as human beings are changing our behavior in a profound way. In the good old days when we had emotions, we would take a photo, or we would write it down, or we would just be pure presence. But today, the devices we have in our pockets are changing the way we store memories in our brain, including emotions, and including exactly that experience this girl had when she went to the bathroom. Because what's happening is that we no longer store memories in our brain. We outsource it to a cloud. Let me explain what I mean about this. A research study was done around 5 years ago where respondents were put into an fMRI scanner, functional magnetic resonance imaging technology, peering into the brain. They wanted to find out, how do we store memories today? What they realized was that when we store memories, we have changed it, at least today, compared to just 10 years ago. In the old days when, for example, you would be sitting at a dinner table having a discussion about who was that president in the United States back in the 80s, and people would have a heated discussion, and at some point, perhaps half an hour later, some genius person would say, "Yeah, I know who it was," and come up with a name. What will happen today? You know what the answer is. We'll grab our phones and some brilliant stunt will happen within 5 seconds. A person will say, "I know who it is," beaming with pride in the eyes while that Google answer is peering on the screen. And that's exactly the point, because that's what we realized when doing this research study. People no longer store the memories in the brain. In fact, when respondents were asked a very tricky question, a question where they really had to think very carefully about it, it did not search in the memory bank of our brain. It went straight to one region in the brain where the little Google spot was sitting. It was basically just pointing at Google as the answer. So we are not just memorizing emotions anymore, which is stored as that selfie, which we, by the way, are logging into our phone and which is stored in a cloud later on, will also do the same when it comes to knowledge. And that is my concern, because the concern is not just that we are obsessed with a new technology. It's also that we right now are losing the fundamental aspect of what we stand for as human beings. The issue is today when we are walking on the street and seeing things that it's likely we don't see things anymore. I can't count the number of times I've been standing on the street waiting for someone. They've just been standing by that phone. And if the person was late, the person they wanted to meet up with, what's the first thing they would do? Grab the phone and do anything with the phone just to make sure they don't look like a complete loser. But there's three consequences around this. First, we don't see things anymore. That means that all those small details, I call them small data, seemingly insignificant observations made in our daily lives, completely overseen. The second thing is even worse. We don't meet people anymore. I was sitting in a bar the other day in New York City, and I was sitting next to five people. And I asked the bartender, why did you choose this job? He said, because I love to meet new people. And then he looked at me and he said, but I'm changing my job now. While he looked at the people sitting next to me, all of them busy with their phones. So we don't meet people anymore. But the worst thing is not that. The worst thing is we never get bored anymore. And boredom is the foundation for creativity. It is that pause which is giving our brain the ability to reinvigorate how our data is stored and reflect on things, connecting dots in unusual ways. Remember, creativity is all about combining two ordinary things in a new way. But we don't have the time for it anymore. Because we don't have the patience anymore. The issue is that as soon as we have 5 seconds down, we grab the phone, it becomes almost addictive to us to fill that little space. That space which is when you're sitting in the car from a meeting to your home. That space when you're sitting in the train and looking out of the window. That space when you're waiting for that bus to arrive. It's gone. And that's my concern right now. Because fundamentally, that also removes another aspect of our lives. And that's empathy. Let me just pause here for a second. What is empathy? Empathy is the ability for you to put yourself in the shoes of another person and see the world from that point of view, to experience it and feel it from another person's point of view. But the issue is with coronavirus that the world has kind of changed. There's a couple of things which have fundamentally changed the way we interact with people. First of all, empathy is also the ability to see the other person's small micro-expressions. And these expressions indicate if that person really is with you or not. It's not necessarily something you can describe or pencil out. It's something you kind of just feel. And the issue is when you wear a mask, you really can't see it anymore. I experienced that some time ago when I went to Hong Kong, just as the pandemic had broken out across China. I went to my favorite restaurant and guess what? My favorite bartender was there and I said, hey, how are you? And he looked at me with somewhat dead eyes. It was like I had a disconnection with him, something I never tried before. So I said to him, can you take that mask off just for a second so I can see how you look like? And he did it. And we're reconnected again. That's the moment I realized that empathy is first of all expressed through the micro expressions in our face. But there's a second thing disappearing right now, and that is the screens. Right now, you're listening to me, but if you were to watch me right now, you'd be looking at me on a screen just like what you're experiencing every day when you sit behind Zoom or Microsoft Teams or Jeans meetings. We have this distance to the world. And what's fascinating about it is that from a rational point of view, you basically will just be watching the person and talk to the person and everything will be fantastic. But the reality is that something is disconnected. When you see a person and when you listen to the person, you kind of, from a rational point of view, feel like connected with that person. But then when you scratch the surface, there's nothing. Do you know what's missing? Empathy. Have you tried that you're walking into a meeting room and you sometimes say to yourself, my God, there's a bad energy in this room. Do you ever get that feeling through Zoom? No, you don't, right? Just recently, in fact, last week, I had a meeting with a client I never met before. They were in Georgia. And we had a chat back and forth. And in fact, I interacted with them for almost 4 weeks before I finally flew to Georgia and met them for the first time. I said to them, tell me, when you had this interaction with me through Skype, how was it different compared to when we met up in person? And he said, it's kind of interesting. I kind of felt I knew you when I saw you on the screen, but I also felt I was hitting a glass roof somehow. I couldn't really scratch the surface and really find out who you were. Yeah, you were charming in front of that screen, but there was no depth. It's first when I met you, there was depth in it. That depth is what I call empathy, and that is slowly fading away. It's slowly fading away because it requires you to have time to see the world from another person's point of view. And we don't have that time. We believe we have it. We believe we're doing it every day. But for every day goes by, we are seeing a bigger and bigger distance between who we are and what the world stands for. So let me just pause here for a second. There's two observations we're talking about now which are profound to human mankind. First, of course, the ability to put yourself in the shoes of another person. Crazy, but kind of true. And of course, the other aspect is what we talked about first. The fact that we right now are suffering from our phones and our ability to disconnect, or rather, to be present. It's something I've been struggling with for a long time. So 4 years ago, I had a pretty profound experience. I was walking down this street in Copenhagen, and I was spending time with another author. And I asked him, tell me, how is it going with your writing? He said, it's interesting you're asking me that, because the reality is I kind of have a writer's block. I didn't know I would get it, but I kind of lost all my creativity. I don't know why. I said, have you thought about that there may be a reason why? He said, no. How often do you use your phone? He said, every day. I said, more? Yeah, kind of every minute, I guess. I said, do me a favor. Why don't we bet? Why don't we try to remove that phone? So we did it. Him and I removed the phone altogether, and I haven't had a phone ever since. Why is that? Because we sometimes need to let go. We are going through what I call transition zones in our lives. And transition zones are when we transform from one state of mind to another. Think about this. In the good old days, I guess back in the 60s or 50s, 40s or 30s, people would wear hats, a business hat. They would wake up in the morning, go through the routines, take on the hat and go to work. It was very clear what was work and what wasn't. When you go to work, you were wearing a hat. You were wearing a business attire. But then something happened. The hat disappeared and something profound happened. Let me just pause here for a second and put that into perspective. A couple of years ago, I was on a holiday and I met up with another fellow author, Malcolm Gladwell. He's the guy who wrote The Tipping Point. And we're sitting there in the savannah, and Malcolm was aware of my next book called Small Data. Remember, that's the seemingly insignificant observations we make in people's lives. And he told me, Martin, you are inspecting all these small data everywhere. Have you noticed there's something strange about being in Zambia? I looked around and I said, yeah, you're right. Everyone is wearing a hat. He said, yeah. What does it mean? I said, I really don't know. So Malcolm, he continued my sentence saying, did you know that when J.F. Kennedy went through his inauguration, he actually was the first president ever in history not wearing a hat? You may not think that's really important, but in fact, that was the first time where we were no longer separating work from private. Remember, back then you would take on your hat and go to work. You may even put your tie on and go to work. But from that moment, it disappeared. And we're blending private and work into one big thing. Remember, today, you have an office installed in your pocket called the smartphone. It basically means that we're no longer separate private from work. And it means that in the end of the day, our brain can't handle it anymore. Because here's the reality. When you go home, you still are doing your private work and your work at the same time. But in the good old days, we were able to separate those things. And then try to fast forward to 2020, the coronavirus world here, the year where we all have a pipeline straight into our bedrooms, where we're watching Zoom, Microsoft, and GoToMeetings, and where we really have no separation between politics, bureaucracy, bedrooms, and a life as an ordinary person. These things are one big blend. In the good old days, one was talking about business to business and business to consumer. The idea of we're dealing with business people, they're different. And then we have the consumer, business to consumer, B2C. These are private people. People have always been separating those two things. Why? Because we were wearing that hat. Because we're separating those two different mindsets. But now it's changing. Those two terms are out of the window. And the new term I believe is coming is called H2H, human to human. Because there is no business person anymore. I mean, think about it. Your wife is shipping a vase from China to Denmark. And it departs in one piece and it arrives in 2,000 pieces. Think about it. They're using DHL. Would you ever use them at work later on? Of course you wouldn't. You're completely affected by it. And of course you're just checking those emails when you're home from work. And you're doing some of that private stuff at work, right? All this stuff means that we're blending worlds together. We have no transitions in our lives. Let me just explain how important transitions are. Transitions take us from one mindset to another. Have you ever tried that you are going from destination A to destination B? And then you go back again and you realize that the first trip from A to B seemed much longer than the one from B to A, right? You tried it. Do you know why? Because when we go from A to B, we are memorizing the tour. We're kind of rendering it in our brain. And when we go back again from B to A, we're playing that memory back. We're in fact not seeing what's around us. We're sort of writing on stored memory encoding in our brain. That's the reason why transitions are important. Have you ever tried the fact that sometimes if you go on a weekend trip, just for 2 days, you go away, far away, up in the mountains, out to the sea, and when you come back after 2 days, say, my God, it felt like I was away for a whole week. Do you know why? Because you went through a transition in your brain. The more transitions we have in our brain, the more we feel time is changing. The more transition, the slower time goes. It's kind of crazy, but it's something I realized a couple of years ago when I began to work with Swiss International Airlines. What I realized when I spoke to the cabin crew in the air about how often are you receiving information from the folks on ground, they would say, never. We never receive information, perhaps once a month. I was kind of disturbed by it. I mean, don't they want to build a culture? So I asked the people in the head office, how often do you communicate with them in the air? They said, every week. Why was there such a big difference? Because think about it. When you're in the air, you have a constant stream of transitions. You're seeing a new environment every day, and that means your time goes much slower. Whereas people going to the same office day after day feel the time goes much faster. Have you ever tried that you're talking to your grandmother, granddad, and they're saying, oh my God, time is going fast. And you're left wondering, how can it go fast? They're sitting in the same room all the time. You know why? Because they feel no transitions. So time is going fast. So what we learned in the case of Swiss International Airlines was in fact that there is multiple time zones, so to speak. Not the ones between countries, but in our mind. And those time zones determine how we see the reality around us. Which brings me back to that bedroom. Because when we went through the coronavirus experience, all of us were stuck in a room, right? And suddenly people were saying to me, my God, time is going fast. It's like I'm so busy, but I haven't achieved a thing. That huge to-do list I had, I don't know what happened with it, but I never managed to do all of it. Why? You know why. Because there were zero transitions. The reality is that we, you and I, live in a world of perception. And we can control it or we can let go with it. But we now have a shiny device in our hand which is going to determine what direction we want to go. And I think the coronavirus, in many ways, have given us an impression about what is likely to happen, not next year, but 20 years from now on. Let me just pause for a second and put this into perspective. When we were stuck in these rooms, another thing happened, which I think, in addition to the lack of empathy, will have a profound impact about who we are as human beings in the future. Did you notice that you didn't touch anyone? Well, at least we were asked not to touch anyone, so perhaps you were touching some, but the reality was that we were not exposed to the sense of touch as much as we once were. Why do I raise this issue? I'll tell you why. 5 years ago, there was an experiment done with rats. There's two sets of rats put into various control groups. The first set of rats were touched, pets, every hour by the scientists. They loved it. The second pair of rats were never touched. Yes, they were fed food as the first pair, but there was one profound difference in how they behaved. As the first pair of rats were thriving, and by the way, none of them died within the 6 weeks of the experiment, the second pair of rats saw something completely different. They started to die one by one. The biggest organ we have on our body is the sense of touch, our tactile sensation. And it's directly correlated with how long time we live. Many years ago, I was asked by the Japanese government to figure out a way to increase the happiness of old people in Japan. It's a crazy assignment, and given the fact that they have the second longest living population in the world. But what they realized through studies were that the older generation were just not that happy anymore. Going to the retirement homes, I realized that they were never touching anything. And in fact, perhaps there were a correlation between lack of touch and the lack of happiness. So, in the best Japanese style, of course, they came up with a brilliant idea. Why don't we create a robot you can touch and dress it up as a seal? And that's exactly what they did. And here we go. The old people are touching those seals. And yes, the life happiness went up. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the answer is to give everyone a seal around the world, even though it may help. But it gives us an indication of what is likely to happen in the future. Let me just take you to Sydney for a second. Sydney in Australia, where I was stuck during the month of April and May during the COVID-19, I realized that people started to touch dogs more than ever before. I mean, I'd never seen people, strangers, go up to others' dogs and touch them, particularly not old ladies, but that's exactly what I saw. And I was stunned by it because it gave me kind of a sense of, my God, what's going on here? Why do people have this urge to touch things? My theory about small data is that we're all out of balance. Maybe I feel overweight. Maybe I feel alone. Or in this case, it may be I feel a suppression of the sense of touch. And that's exactly the reason why people suddenly, in compensation for the lack of touch, began to touch things like dogs. What's the consequence of this? We began to buy more pets. And pet sales during the month of April, May, June, July, August in the United States went up 362%. We simply were craving the sense of touch. We're craving the sense of being together with other people, feeling a sense of belonging. But there was another consequence of this, which is we also were craving a sense of purpose. You see, here's the issue. If we don't have a sense of purpose, why should we live? But if I don't touch things anymore, if I don't really see things, if I'm scratching that window on my screen to the rest of the world, then suddenly it's like I feel empty. And that's the reason why, sadly, the suicide rate around the world has nearly tripled over the last half year, in particular among the young people, because the sense of purpose has disappeared. And that's the reason why we search a lot on those smartphones. It may be we had a god in the past, we had someone in Mecca, or we were Buddhist, or we were Christians or Catholics, but the reality is we had something to believe in. What do we really believe in today? Do we believe in the Kardashians? Or is it Donald Trump we believe in? Or do we believe in that local celebrity around the corner? Or that YouTuber was telling us all this amazing advice in a steady stream supported by product placement? That's the issue we're seeing right now, that we really are lacking something to believe in. Now, if you combine that with the lack of empathy, with the lack of touch, and our inability to have transitions in our lives, we're sitting with a ticking bomb in front of us. And that ticking bomb is called fear. Let's go into the brain for a second. If you go into the upper part of your brain, you'll see an area called the amygdala. Amygdala is also called the fear spot. It's where, whenever I feel fear, that will be activated. What we learned through our studies is that fear is not straightforward. In fact, fear is accumulative. Let me give you an example. If you have someone breaking into your home and that person is disappearing again, you come home and you see that burglary, how do you feel? Scared, right? But what's really fascinating about this is that you won't just feel scared inside your home. I bet you the day after when you walk on the street, you look behind your shoulders as well, even though it's nothing to do with what went on in that home, right? That's the reason why we know today that fear is accumulative. And fear is building up because of numerous reasons. One, first of all, we see a lot of news. And it's very rare the news are good these days, right? There's all about the crime, all about the virus, all about the global warming issues, or issues about sexual harassment. All these fear factors are cumulative in our brain. But on top of that, what happens is that as fear builds up, we also become on a constant alert. And that alert becomes a defense mechanism for change. That means we lock ourselves inside behind our screens, protecting ourselves. And then there's a second factor happening, that is that we now are disconnected from our tribe. Remember when we were, living in a different time and age, we were monkeys or just very urban human beings. We actually, back then, were part of tribes. We kind of still are today, even though I don't think you and I will admit it. But I mean, you probably would wear a certain dress code if you go to a certain party. And if you're wearing the complete wrong dress, you feel kind of uncomfortable, right? Or you wear that brand because it shows a signal to the outside world. All of that is kind of a tribe membership, right? But as you're locked behind your doors, behind that screen, you no longer can see the fellow employees at your company, you kind of feel separated. And that separation is one of the reasons why we now know that the accumulation of fear and loneliness is going up. My God, this is depressing, right? You're thinking, I know. So let's just look at the bright side. All this stuff I'm taking you through right now is where we are right now in our lives. Some people have managed to navigate through this, and other people probably are struggling with it. In fact, I think most people are. And that's the reason why I would give you some advice about how do we get around all this stuff. And by the way, what will it mean for the future? First of all, one thing I've learned is that history is like a pendulum going back and forth. It always goes to the extreme. And guess what? We are at an extreme right now. Technology has become kind of the answer to anything. Raise a problem, and there's an app for that, I bet you, somewhere. And if you don't have the app, ask someone and they will have one for you. That is where we are today, 2020. But what is happening now is that people are starting to seek that alternative, that out-of-balance compensation. And they're going to do that by changing their lifestyle. So what is my advice to you to change your lifestyle? And where will this lead to, let's say, 20 years from now on? First of all, we will see that the sense of purpose, the hunt for that, will grow dramatically. Yes, it may be the concept of religion somewhat is out of fashion at the moment, but we will see a resurgence of religion happening. It may be it's not called religion, it may be it's not called Christianity or whatever word we put on it, but it will still represent exactly the ingredients of what a religion stands for. Remember, a religion is all about a sense of belonging, rituals, storytelling, a clear enemy pictures, symbols. All those things are developing the foundation for a religion. That's the foundation we quite often need. The second thing we'll see happening is that transitions will have to come back into our lives. You need to separate work from private. I know it's so tempting to look at that message on your smartphone at 9 p.m. Oh, by the way, not to switch off the phone during the nighttime, because what if you receive that urgent call? Forget about it. You can't do it. It may be from a rational point of view, you think you can, but you can't. When we have been doing our fMRI studies over the last many years, we've learned that our brain really behaves in an odd way. 85% of everything you do every day appeals to our subconscious mind. That only leaves 15% to the rational place in your brain. Oh, you may be saying, oh, this guy, he is nuts. But let me just test you for a second. Have you tried, just listen to this, have you tried that you're watching television and you grab that remote control and it's flat for batteries, so you press extra hard to squeeze the last drop of battery out of it? Yeah, you have, right? Or have you tried if you're on a diet, you look in that fridge, you're going to the fridge, you're sitting in the kitchen working, and you're just checking out if there's something delicious in there, only to conclude there's nothing. So you go back to your seat, and after 10 minutes, you get this extreme urge. You stand up again and you go in and double check that there's nothing in that fridge. You tried it? Or what if you're vacuum cleaning and there's a little thread on the carpet and you continue vacuuming instead of just picking it up with your fingers? Or do you, by the way, touch wood? You know, knock on wood? All of these things are what I call irrational behaviors. That's the 85%, along with a couple of other smaller details. One of them is to fall in love. One is to lose people. All these factors are really driving your and my behavior every day. But as we increasingly believe, because of artificial intelligence, virtual reality, and computers and data, that we are rational, we believe that we can put everything into a spreadsheet and calculate our behavior, measure who is going to win the next election, or what the likability of that campaign is going to work when you run advertising. As we believe in that, we're actually getting more and more irrational, because we can't. Here is the fact. We increasingly become irrational the more things are rational around us. And you have to play along that game. You have to appeal to the senses. You have to stimulate your senses. And with that, you also have to create transitions in your lives. So, do me a favor, separate private from work. Don't be fooled with that phone addiction. In fact, it's just in your mind. The third thing I would recommend you to do is to find a sense of purpose. Do something which is not work-related, not something which has a direct profit line, but do something where you can see a change happening in the society. In fact, that's what we're seeing the younger generation, the millennials, are doing right now. They're desperately searching for a sense of purpose. The older generation are lacking it. And that means that we increasingly feel kind of empty as we come home. We kind of feel like we're on autopilot. So having those three things in mind, where will our society go? Let's say 20 years from now on. I personally think there's three major things which will happen in our society. First of all, we'll see that there will be a dramatic split between people which are addicted to phones and those who are not, those who are managing to control it and who are not. And we'll have a huge outbreak group, people which are disconnected from the grid. It sounds kind of crazy when you think about it, right? Because now we are so connected. I mean, as soon as you have a really bad Wi-Fi, you will immediately go into panic, right? But we will see now an increasing large group around the world will disconnect themselves. That's the first thing will happen over the next 20 years. The second thing will happen is that we'll become increasingly local. And forget about international markets. Forget about international global brands. They will die. Oh yeah, we'll have Coca-Cola and the odd ones of Apple around. But besides that, everything will be local. Do you know why? It's very simple why. Because the more we are under pressure, the more we are afraid, we build walls around ourselves to protect ourselves. Let me just put this into perspective. Think about this with the net. I tend to say that the worst thing about the internet today is transparency. People think that transparency is amazing. I want to have all these informations. I want to know everything about everyone. But the reality is, transparency is the worst which can happen for us because it creates envy. It makes us compare notes and conclude we are not good enough. Just like in China. When China had no ability to compare their status with other people in the world, their happiness index was pretty high. And then from one moment to another, as they could go online or they can watch the Kardashians or Desperate Housewife and compare the fact that they only had one television and they, on those television sets, had 2.6 televisions, they very quickly concluded one thing. They were no longer happy. Happiness is also disappearing when suddenly my salary is X. And guess what? I was so happy about it until I knew my colleague. He had X plus 10%. Oh, the fact that in fact I'm in a situation now where I'm comparing how popular I am, how many votes I have. All these stuff, the likes, the votes, the followers, is making us more or less unhappy. That's the reason why we, in the future, will change our behavior. We will get out of the grid and we will get into a local community where we'll be together with like-minded people, sharing a language which only they understand, celebrating each other, but in reality, removing all the uncomfortable messages. I know my little talk here has been kind of, I know, a bit depressing, but I'll tell you the reason why I tell you this. I tell you this because we have a choice. You and I have a choice now. Either we change our behavior and we start to drive the development, or else we just let go and follow the stream. Now, I don't need to tell you which one I believe in. Now, the question is, are you ready for the change?
You have been listening to The Next 20 Years, a podcast about the future. If these topics interest you, I urge you to press the subscribe button in your preferred podcatcher, and you will get a message when we release the next episode.